Boy, it's so good to be in God's house and just see you walking across the aisle and meeting new folks. And hopefully you did. I know we get in our normal habit and rhythm of sitting in the same place when we come to church and talking to the same people and shaking the same hands. And so we did this a couple of weeks ago, and you so embraced it that we wanted to do it again. And so we're glad we had that opportunity. It's so good to see that. Hopefully you did journey over and meet someone new. Find out something new about them, develop a new relationship, because we're in a series entitled Relationship Goals God's Way. And over the last couple of weeks, we started off talking about love, then we talked about humility, then we talked about forgiveness, hard topic and hard week. Last week, we talked about an uncommon commitment. And today, I want to talk to you in Relationship Goals about SOS. SOS. That is the old Morse code symbol, the universal international distress symbol, three dots followed by three dashes followed by three dots, if you know Morse code. That's what it is, nine different digits there. And really it means save our ship or save our soul. And that's kind of the idea. If you hear that and you're on the international waters, wherever that's coming from, you go, because they are in desperate need of someone to step in and save their soul. Now, today I want to talk to you about SOS, but I want to talk to you about saving our relationships. That's the S. Notice how creative this is. Ready? SOS. Give me a hand for that. That was all me right there. Pretty much that's all I got for you. So y'all can go home. Now, here's the truth. Here's the truth, and let's put it up there. The truth is, we all have harmful patterns. Go ahead and go to that first slide. We all have harmful patterns in relational patterns that we need to allow God to change in us, or they will destroy those we love and us. None of us are perfect. Man, it doesn't matter how long you've been married. It doesn't matter how long you've been a Christian. It doesn't matter whether you're a Christian or not even a Christian, or how long you've been in church. We all, if we aren't careful, we have harmful relational patterns that if we don't hold them, if we don't do well with them, man, our relationships, our friendships, and you know I've told you every week that this is not just about marriages. This is about all of our friendships. That we all have had those seasons in our life where someone we got along with, boy, we were connected at the hip. We just were like, we were just friends for so long, and then all of a sudden that splits. We really can't point back to it, but you know that we don't enjoy being with them quite as much. Today, in our social media world, kids do what they call ghosting. And basically, if when you grew up, if you wanted to see your friends, you had to wait till school the next day, right? We had one phone in our house, and usually my sister was on it talking to some boy or something like that, and we're just kind of standing there. But, you know, if you wanted to reengage with your friends the next day, you had to go back to school. I remember growing up thinking, that's the only reason why I go to school, right? But today, they come home, and you've got social media, and you've got texting, and you can literally text all you want to and talk all you want to, but what will happen these days is what teens refer to as ghosting. When you're done with somebody, you just stop responding. You just ghost them. When you're tired of being in a relationship with someone, tired of talking with someone, you just kind of say, I'm done. You don't respond. That's called ghosting. But here's the reality. In any relationship, no matter how long you've been married, no matter how long you've been friends, we all have those relational patterns that can cause conflict in a relationship. Even if you love God and love each other, we can begin to do this in our relationships. Every week we've shared with you a testimony of someone from our staff. I told you when we started this series, we're going to be very real and very open and very honest. And we talked to our staff, told them the topics we were going to do. And staff said, you know what, this will be our story in this. And so today I want to talk to you and introduce you to Bo and Sarah as they talk about conflict in marriage. See if you can listen in.
Thank you. So we are Bo and Sarah Landers. I am one of the discipleship pastors up here. I work with our Adult One, our Young Families Ministry, our life groups at home, help out with other discipleship aspects throughout the church.
I'm Sarah. I teach high school history, and we have two little boys, Owen, who will be 2 in September, and then Elliot is 7 months old now. So got the two of them, which keep us pretty busy.
As far as our lives as a couple, I think the amount of conflict that we have has increased exponentially since we've had kids, and having to deal with conflict between us plus stuff with the kids, that has been a challenge.
So we have this conflict that we're dealing with the kids, and then we have, in the midst of that, we're trying to figure out how to parent well. Then that causes conflict in between us. And so we find ourselves, whether it's lunch or dinner or snack time after nap, I mean, you name it, you know, we find ourselves just in these little spats with one another. It's heightened, right, at because we're in the midst of this stressful situation. We try and sit down and assess what's going on as best as we can. The real goal we're trying to get at is understanding. I'm trying to understand where she's coming from, and she's trying to understand where I'm coming from. We cannot also add to whatever's going on.
What's really stressful for me, what makes it a lot worse for me, is if, and Bo has a tendency to want to talk about everything as it's happening. So for me, it's kind of a matter of saying, hey, let's put a pause on this between us, and then really being intentional about, okay, well, after the kids have gone to bed, let's sit down and let's talk. You and I, let's get together, let's talk this through, let's work this out.
For me, I want the quick resolution. I want the fix to happen. I want it to go. We know that the times that we're not addressing those, and we look 3 weeks down the road and we haven't really talked about it, we've kind of just, you know, band-aided it for a little while, those conflicts turn into something bigger. And that's when it starts to get a little bit more dangerous, where we're looking at each other, you know, just mad, you know, because, well, you're saying this and you're saying, and so those are the times, and those conversations are even harder because we've got to backtrack, you know, to not even really what started it, but the sentiment that's going along with it.
I think the thing coming out of these types of conflict that, you know, after we've sat down and we've talked something through, the really great thing about that is that at the end of the day, I can look at him. This is a man who loves his kids and who loves me as his wife and is so committed to taking care of us. It's worth taking time to sort through what it is about these things that is bad so that we can fix them, so that we can grow more together. But in the midst of all of that, you know, this is really someone that I can love and can respect.
And so with every little conflict, and just, or even if they've built up into a big conflict, when understanding is had, it promotes our love that much more, and it propels our love that much more, for how I'm able to understand her and the way that God's gifted her. I think for us, what we've seen is that those everyday conflicts are actually what really helps us love one another that much more.
You know, as we talk about save our relationships, the writer of the book of Hebrews put it this way. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, he says, "Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing." And as you look at Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, in that passage, the writer says, let us consider, let us think about, let us ponder how we can what? We can spur one another on to love and good deeds. So how do we spur one another in our relationships? How do we encourage one another? How do we spur one another on toward love and good deeds? And so we're going to go to Ephesians chapter 4 today, and I'm going to lay out for you some simple truths. And if you have your Creek Guide, your sermon note insert, I want to encourage you to walk through, to take notes. And then on the back, I just put for you a quick summary. 6 do's and 6 don'ts in healthy relationships. Do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. And they all come right out of Ephesians chapter 4. And I want to encourage you, if you want to just take and put that up on your refrigerator, if you want to blow it up and put it on your refrigerator, whatever it is, we want to encourage you in your relationship. So number one, how do we spur one another on to save our relationships? First thought is this: you have to walk in truth. You have to walk in truth. And how do we walk in truth? How do we live in truth? How do we act in truth? Well, we have to know the truth first. And what is the truth? Look at what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4 as we walk in truth. He says, you were taught. In other words, as God's children, we understand the ideas of commitment and love and humility and forgiveness. In other words, you've already been taught. You know these things. He says, but we have to walk in truth. He says, with regard to your former way of life. Our former way of life, or the unbelieving way of life, or the unsaved way of life, is to be unforgiving, not committed, to be proud and arrogant. Man, to never move in such a way that would put me at a disadvantage potentially in a relationship. But he says, listen, if we're going to walk in truth, we have to regard those former ways as the wrong ways. And we have to instead, he says, put on the new self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires. Listen to this. He says, to be made in a new attitude and in new minds. He says, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. So let me give you a couple of thoughts on this. Number one, if you're going to walk in truth, you have to put off the old selfish self. The old selfish self. And let me tell you, the old selfish self is just yourself. It's just who I am. I want my needs met. I want things to be done for me. I want everything to flow my way. I want the wind at my back. I want the sun on my face. I want my way. That's the old selfish self. And when we say old, it's still me. But the old means before I became a believer, before I became a Christ follower, that's the way I lived and that's the way I acted. Go to the next slide here. He says, Dietrich Bonhoeffer said this, when all is said and done, the life of faith is nothing if not an unending struggle of the spirit with every available weapon against the flesh. Man, if I'm going to put off the old selfish self, I have to understand that it is a constant battle. That battle never goes away. That battle never goes away. I want you to know you will never totally, this side of the dirt, you and I will never totally put away the old selfish self. It's always going to rear its ugly head. It's always going to long for us to be fulfilled, for things to go my way. Man, it's a constant battle. Bonhoeffer was right. The Christian life, the believing life, is nothing if it's not just a constant battle between God's Spirit wanting to flow through us and the flesh wanting to control us. So not only do we renew our old self and we take away the old selfish self, but we also have to renew our mind. So write that down. You have to renew your mind. That's what Paul said in Ephesians chapter 4. He says we have to change our attitude and change our mind. I don't know if we're talking about SOS today. I don't know where your friendship is. I don't know where your relationship is, where your best buddy or your best girlfriend or whatever it is, or in your marriage. But there are times that we just need to control, alt, delete. That we need a total reset on the way we think. Because what happens is when a couple begin to date, or they begin to talk, or friendship develops, you never assume they're out to make you angry. You never assume they just do a certain thing to get under your skin. You never do, or you would never have been friends to begin with, right? But what happens, as long as the flesh begins to well up in us, we get a little bitter, we get a little angry, we get a little mad, something doesn't go our way, then what do? Man, we begin to assume they're doing that on purpose, don't we? And a lot of times, I know, ladies, you've told your husband 1,000 times to do a certain thing. And when you first got married, it was kind of funny. You thought, he's forgetful. Now, after you've been married a while, you think, he left that there to stick it to me. Don't you, ladies? How many of you, ladies, be honest, you've thought, right? You mean only 4 women will tell the truth in here? Okay, there you go, a husband raising his wife's hand. There you go. You do, right? We change our minds. Look, ladies, write this down. He was a slob when you married him. He's a slob today. He's not doing it against you, just like he wasn't attacking his mom when he was a slob, right? Same thing. Guys, man, you know, our wives used to do certain things when we were dating or whatever, and then all of a sudden, if we aren't careful, When they do it now, it's she's doing it to get at me. In friendships, man, if you want a good God-honoring friendships, and one of the most discouraging things over the years is 21 years as a pastor. One of the most discouraging things for me has been to see believers who used to be close, used to be good friends, have something get a little twisted, and they begin to assume the worst about the other individual. And what happens is they split them up. I'm telling you, that's the way churches split. Boy, you all of a sudden, you divide up in business meeting, and instead of someone just having a difference of opinion, they're attacking you. In your friendships, it's the same way. Man, whether you're young or you're old, at a certain point you became friends because you trusted the person, you believed in the person, but there's a mind shift that takes place, and it's a mind shift to move to me. Second, you have to put on the new self. You have to say, you know what, the old selfish self has taken over. I've become a little selfish. I've become a little needy. I've become a little more about me, but I'm going to put on the new self again. I'm going to renew. I love that idea of renewing the mind and renewing the self. In other words, if we aren't careful, we got to constantly continue to wash the dirty laundry of our minds and our words and our thoughts. So we have to walk in truth. The truth is this: our old selfish flesh always wants to show back up. And the only way to keep that from happening is constant renewal. To say, I got to stop thinking that way. I've got to stop saying that. I've got to stop acting. So walk in truth. As you've learned, you know what to do. Man, you know how to love. You know how to be committed. You know how to be humble. You know how to do all of those things. But we have to have a constant renewal because the flesh wants to rear its ugly head. Here's the second thing that Paul says is you also have to learn to walk in love. If you're going to save your relationships, whether it's marriage or friendships, you have to learn to walk in love. What does Paul say in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25? He says, therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor. Speak the truth in love, as your translation might say. For we are all members of one body. In other words, we're close, we're together, we're friends, we're family, we're a husband and wife, we're a father and children, or a mother and children, we're with our parents. He says, in your anger, do not sin, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. Look at verse 27. And do not give, he says, the devil a foothold. Verse 28, he says, anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with their own hands that they may have something to share with those who are in need. Now, first idea that he talks about, if we're going to walk in love, all right, if we're going to walk in love, we can't lie. We have to learn to speak the truth. You can't lie. You have to learn to speak the truth. Now, this seems pretty self-evident, but how often do we just fall short in this area? We tell little white lies. We tell a little story. We may not have done something big, but the lie sure makes it look worse than it was. I love this. I don't know who wrote it, but it says, if you tell a lie once, then all your truths become questionable. Isn't that kind of amazing? That you can live a truthful life in so much of your life, but man, when one big lie or even one lie is exposed, then everything comes into question, right? That's why it's so important. That's why Paul says, listen, speak the truth in love. Now, I want you to know we're going to talk about angry speech. There are times that, man, we love to speak the truth just so we can hurt someone. Let me tell you, that's not speaking the truth in love. If the only reason why you're telling the truth is just because you want to get the upper hand in a fight with your husband or your wife or your kids or a friend, I want you to know that's not speaking the truth in love. That's not what Paul says. He said, speak the truth in a neighborly, loving, compassionate, kind way. I was studying this week on some of the harm that is done from lying. Some of the biggest emotions when someone finds out, whether it's a husband, wife, or a friend, when they find out that they have been lied to, they feel disrespected. Sometimes they feel like a fool. They find it hard to trust again. As you think about it, disrespected when you lie to someone, or sometimes they feel like a fool. Anybody ever been in that situation where a friend or some acquaintance or someone's told you something and you've taken it as the gospel truth and you've acted on it, you've gone and said something to someone? Perhaps you're trying to defend them, right? They come and say, you know what so-and-so did to me? And you go, man, I'm sorry about that. And then you all of a sudden take and act on that truth and you go say, hey, listen, you ought not to be saying that to so-and-so. And they go, what? Man, and you feel like a fool. So I want to encourage you, man, speak the truth, but speak it in love. Wrap every truthful statement you make in love, and don't ever forget, one lie makes all the other truths questionable. I know there have been seasons with our kids, as with all kids, that, you know, they're telling us a story. And sometimes a story is just a story, right? You're just listening. Here's what happened at school. Here's what happened to this. But there are some stories. I'm not talking about a lie story. I'm talking about some stories that, as a parent, call for a response. How many of you know what I'm talking about? Okay, that just wasn't a story. That was a story that if all of those facts are true, I need to do something, right? You know what? Mamas, how many of you know what I'm talking about, right? You ever done this with your kids? You look them right in the eye, and this is the way I do it. I said, I want you to know, now that you've told me that, it requires response on my behalf. So I want to go over the details of this story very clearly with you again, because once I act, if I look like a fool, there's going to be more harm than good that comes out of this story. So make sure everything you're saying from this point on, and I will give them the opportunity to retell the story and shave off some of the details, right? Anybody do that with your kids? Look me in the eye and understand. Well, I don't want you to do anything. No, 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 no. What you just told me requires a response. But I want to make sure I'm acting on truthful statement. And so we need to understand, one lie makes all your other truths questionable. So don't lie. Here's a second thought. Don't sin in your anger. Now, I want you to be real clear what that does not say. That does not say anger is sin. Notice that. We are emotional, relational beings. And if you are married, you are married to another emotional, relational, sinful being, right? And you are. So anger is not a sin. Everybody, but doesn't that feel good? Let's just say it together. One, two, anger is not a sin. One, two, three. Yeah, if y'all would only amen that good from time to time. Man, anger is not a sin. Being angry is not a sin. Angry reactions, angry words, angry responses, those are the sin. Does that make sense? Man, it doesn't matter who you are or how long you've been married or how long you've been a friend with somebody or what age you are. Man, we are emotional, flawed beings surrounded by other, more emotionally flawed beings. That's what I've noticed in my life. And there are times and seasons that something happens or something is said or something is done that causes, man, just a hair to stand up on the back of my neck. And I'm like, man, that kind of makes me mad. That makes me pretty angry. I'm rather angry about that. And so I have to be careful. Anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Here's another. Anger doesn't build anything, but it can destroy everything. Anger doesn't build one thing. The Apostle Paul did not say anger is sin. He said, do not let the sun go down on your anger, giving the devil a foothold. In other words, if I carry yesterday's anger into today, chances are it's going to be compounded by today's anger that will be carried into tomorrow, and the compounding effect is amazing. And we end up with the cold shoulder and harsh words and all of those things. Deal with the anger. He puts a timeline on it. He says, before the sun goes down. Now, for us, that doesn't make sense, but he was using a common phrase of his day. In that day and age, if I was a landowner and you worked for me And that probably meant the only food you could potentially have for your family for that day and the next day is based on the wages that I give you today, or the grain, if you've worked out in my fields, the grain I give you to go home. You are supposed to, as a landowner, settle your account with a worker that day, because that was the only way they had something to feed their family. So Paul uses that same terminology, settle your accounts before the sun goes down. Now for us today, it might be after the kids go to bed, right? But settle it today. In other words, decide, where does this rank in this whole deal? Is this something that just blow it off, that wasn't that big of a deal? Is this something we need to talk about? Is this something we need to seek counseling about? I mean, and let me tell you, don't live your life making mountains out of molehills, or you'll spend your life building mountains that won't help you one lick. And that's one of the things that over the years, even in our disagreeable seasons with four kids and church growing, and man, me doing my PhD, and there were some seasons in there where we were just two ships. Gina and I were just two ships passing in the dark. And you know, I'd be driving home from Southwestern and all day after, been maybe in meetings all day, drove over there for a PhD seminar, driving home, got to preach Wednesday night, whatever it was. And I would be driving for that hour and 15 minutes in traffic, just loving traffic and loving how busy my schedule was. And I would walk into the house with expectations of certain things being done. Now, here's the problem. My thoughts were not her thoughts. And if we weren't careful, boy, pretty quickly, things could twist. And then, boy, we can't talk about this now because I got to go preach about Jesus. Which really takes the fun out of a fight, I want you to know. Because I got to talk about loving Jesus and just wait till I get home. But one of the things that we've been really good at, and I want to encourage you, and we haven't been perfect at it, but generally speaking, Jen and I over the years, and there are times that we have said this to each other, is this a mountain or a molehill? You know what you do with a molehill? Done. You know what you do with a mountain? You set your alarm clock for early in the morning, you go grab some shovels, go to work. And there are a lot of times people make mountains out of molehills with friends and those they have relationships and neighbors and husbands and wife. And I want to encourage you, just don't do it. Here's the next thought. Don't steal, work hard. Now we find that pretty easy to connect the dots when it comes to stealing things and objects. Man, don't, you know, if you're my neighbor, don't come over and steal my junk, and I won't come over and steal your junk, and we're all good, right? But you're like, how do I steal in a relationship? Let me tell you how you steal in a relationship. By taking more out than you put in. By taking more out than you put in. And as it comes to this idea, we certainly understand in general, in life, everybody needs to pull their own weight. Everybody needs to pull their own weight. And I want you to know, if you are not pulling your own weight in a relationship, don't be shocked. Don't be shocked one bit when a little bitterness comes your way. Don't be shocked when a little frustration comes your way. If it's a good, solid relationship, a good, solid relationship is built on what? Is built on putting more into the relationship than I expect out of it. You go, boy, that is a recipe for disaster. Not if the other person is looking to put more into the relationship than they take out of it. In your relationship with friends, man, you go into a friendship that I'm going to put more into this relationship than I take out. And if they're a legitimate friend, a good friend, then they're going to have that same idea that they're going to put more into the relationship than they take out. And I want you to know there are seasons in our life that God allows us to cross paths with someone that is in a needy situation. that boy, for a season, for a time, because of something going on in their life, that they just have needs. And you know what? As God's children, we need to be faithful to meet those needs and share and put more in. And there are times in a marriage relationship, there are seasons in our relationship where Gina's putting more time and energy out because of my schedule. There are other times because of her schedule. Man, I'm putting more in and she's taking out. But in general, man, we should constantly be putting more in than we take out in your friendship. Same way. If you're in a good friendship, there might be a season that you have a friend that they have incredible needs because they've lost a job or something's going on. But I want you to know, since it is a friendship, if they never break that pattern and you step back and analyze, let me just tell you what they are, and you honestly can size them up and you say they're a taker, they're never going to be a giver, then you might want to check that friendship again. If you married that person, tough luck. You just got to figure out how not to steal from that relationship. And so I want you to know, just like someone, my neighbor, and where is Bob? Bob's sitting right back over there somewhere. Bob comes in, steals stuff out of my garage all the time. Anytime I want something, I just got to go over and look in his garage. There it is. I'm kidding you. But here's the reality. What if I did constantly keep going over, finding my stuff in his garage? Wouldn't take us long to not be real good friends. Now, what I really wish is I'd walk out in my garage someday and Bob had put all his stuff in my garage. That would be awesome. Right? But the truth is, man, we need to be, that's what we are. I constantly want to be putting my stuff in Gina's garage. And she's refilling and restocking my cupboard with stuff. So both of us walk around satisfied and blessed and happy. Man, if you have a good friendship, a solid friendship, and I'm just constantly taking stuff out of my cupboard and put it in their cupboard, and they're taking and put it in my cupboard, and not just when they ask, it's just because I want to do it. It's just because I want to do it. Here's a third idea. Walk in wisdom. Walk in wisdom. In other words, we've got to be smart. Well, what does wisdom look like? Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29 says, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building up of others according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." It says, "And do not grieve the Holy Spirit, with whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness and rage and anger." Let me tell you what that says in the original language, and this will help you right now. You ready? It says, "Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger." It's exactly what the Greek says. Get rid of it. It means sweep it out. It means clean it out. Along with every other form of malice. You know, I love that word form. It means that sometimes our anger morphs into different things. Boy, it morphs into different things. And then we could do certain things just to vent our anger because I'm not a screamer. Look at verse 32. He says, "Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as Christ forgave you." Boy, as we think about that, thought number one is this, if you're going to walk in wisdom, is don't harm with your words, instead build up. Don't harm with your words, instead build up. Paul said, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is good for building up of the other one according," listen to this, "to their needs." To their needs. Do not harm with your word, but build up. That word, "do not let any unwholesome word come out of your mouth," that was the same word, that unwholesome word was the same word that was used in the Greek marketplace, in the Roman marketplace of the day. It was the idea of going to a grocery store in the market, in the middle of the city, and look at the fruit, and you're looking, boy, that's some great, boy, apples are beautiful, and such are beautiful, and all of a sudden you look at the peaches, and they're kind of rotted, and there's flies and stuff crawling out of it, and you're like, golly, I just can't wait to bag a bunch of that home, bag up and take it home to my kids. And you take it home in a bag, and you say, hey, kids, I bought some peaches today. And you roll them out on the counter, and you say, like, have a couple. And they're like, no. And you're like, no, those are great. Peaches are supposed to look moldy and have flies coming in out of them. They would say, that looks bad, throw that away. That is the same Greek word translated unwholesome. Rotten fruit. In other words, don't be serving your friends rotten fruit. Guys, don't be serving your wives words with flies and mold. Ladies, don't be serving your husband words with flies and mold in them. And that's exactly what he says. Go to the next one as you think about it. Don't harm with your words, but build up. Look what John Ortberg said. He says, disciplined people can do the right thing at the right time in the right way for the right reason. Boy, your words. And I was just looking this week, and I was thinking, what kind of words are harmful words? What kind of words are inappropriate? I think there are times I've just thought back over my counseling seasons. There are words where people attack someone else's character. And sometimes it comes out right there. You would have thought they would shape it up right there in front of the pastor. They call him for counseling. Character assassination. I've heard things like, I just wonder if he's too much work. You know, my response to that usually is, he is. He's way too much work. But that's what you signed up for. I wonder if he's too much work. Another character assassination. He just never gets it. He never gets it. That's a character assassination. You're irrational. She's irrational. I hear guys say that all the time. It's just kind of attacking the character. I think there are times that threats of abandonment, if this is talking about in marriage in particular, threats of abandonment. I just don't know if I care enough anymore to stay married. That's a threat. I'm not sure why I've stuck around this long. Heard that. Not sure why I've stuck around this long. He just doesn't get it. She just doesn't get it. Here's another one. A threat of exile. In other words, I'm fixing to leave. This one is, I'm fixing to put you in your place. I've heard these. You're lucky I let you even stay in this relationship. You might need to pack your bags. In other words, you're going to exile. Mean challenges. There are times, do you even know what you're talking about? Those are harmful words, demeaning words that attack the character or threaten to throw them out or threaten to whatever. And they happen in friendships as well, just attacking words. He says, we need to be careful with our attacking words. Then the second idea, he says, do not grieve the Holy Spirit. It's almost as if the Holy Spirit just wants to be a conduit flowing through us to demonstrate the fruit of the Spirit to others. But when I sin and I'm angry and I'm mad and I let my anger just get the worst of me, I want you to know, Paul says the Holy Spirit can no longer flow through you. You grieve it. You stop the Spirit's flow. If you go look in 1 Peter chapter 3, it says to men, talking to men, men, if you don't treat your wives correctly, don't expect God to answer your prayers. That's a tall challenge. Man, if you want to see the Spirit of God move in your life and God's Spirit to move in your heart and your mind, man, Paul says, do these right. Don't be angry. Don't use harsh words. Don't be selfish. Put off the old self. Put on the new self. Here's the next thing he says, man. If we're going to walk in wisdom, he says, do not be bitter, but be kind and forgive. Do not be bitter, but be kind and forgive. Boy, that's tough. I don't know who said this, but it was great. Unforgiveness is choosing to stay trapped in the jail cell of bitterness, serving time for someone else's crime. If a friend has done something to you or a mate has done something that's just gotten and you're choosing not to forgive them, then you're serving time in your own jail cell for their crime. And the best thing you can do is forgive them. That's your get out of jail free card. Man, as long as I'm harboring bitterness or anger towards someone else, I'm locked in, just like a game of Monopoly, right? Go straight to jail. Someone does something to you, immediately you get angry and bitter, go to jail. The get out of jail free card is called forgiveness. And guess who gets out? Not them, you. Because we're locked up in our own bitterness and our own anger. The last one talking about using our words and harsh words I talked about in marriage. Let me talk to you about bitterness and forgiveness in friendships. This is someone's not married. So if you're just friends with someone, let me give you some practical principles. Let me give you six. First thing you need to do in a friendship, if they've done something significantly wrong to you, determine to forgive so you aren't locked in the jail cell for their crime. That's number one. Number two, determine if you should continue the relationship. If you are a friend and they've hurt you, based on what they've done, you might need to determine whether you should stay in the friendship or not. And I want you to know, that's what we need to teach our kids too. There are times when someone else does something wrong, somebody else's kids does something wrong, determine, was that a blip in their screen or is that their screen? Does that make sense? Did they just make a mistake or is this a pattern of mistakes going? Determine if you're going to stay in the friendship. Here's number three, you ready? Have an honest conversation about the issue with them. Go to your friend and say, listen, we need to talk. Because you said this, and I found out this, and I want you to know it hurt me. So here, let's talk about the issue. Why would you say that about me? I would never talk that way to you. Be willing to let go, but always remember, especially in friendships. You want to know, is that a pattern that is beginning to develop, or is it a pattern that's being exposed? That you're going to stay in that friendship or stay in that relationship. If you are going to forgive them, then I would encourage you to go back. And this is the same thing in marriage. If you are going to forgive them, remember why you chose them as a friend to begin with. Remember. Think about, you know what? Golly, that was... I'm going to cut them slack. I'm going to stay in this relationship. And I remember they're funny. And you know what? Sometimes funny people say mean things. That's called sarcasm. And it hurt. And so you have that conversation with them. You talk to them. Develop a plan to make sure it doesn't happen again. If it was a significant issue and you're looking at a friend, you say, listen, let me tell you what. You did this. I'm forgiving you. Let's make sure it doesn't happen. Because if it does happen, I want you to know we probably will not be friends. Develop the out clause. Say, if you do this to me again as a friend, this is probably going to end the relationship. So I put everything I said into some do's and don'ts. Six do's and don'ts for great relationships. Let's go ahead and put them up here. Number one, these came straight out of Ephesians 4. This is what you can put up on. Don't lie. Do speak the truth and love to one another. Why? Great relationships are built on truth and trust. Don't, two, sin in your anger. Instead, resolve your anger. Great relationships resolve anger quickly and appropriately. Three, don't steal. In other words, work, do, carry your own weight in every relationship you're in. Great relationships entail both parties pulling their own weight and putting more in than they take out. Don't force, speak harmfully. Say the right thing at the right time. That's wisdom. Great relationships are crammed with encouraging conversations. Here's number five, don't grieve the Spirit, but be led by the Spirit in your conversations and your actions. Relationships, great relationships are growing spiritually. Number six, don't be bitter, angry, or contentious, or slanderous. Instead, be kind, tender, and forgiving. Great relationships require mutual compassion and forgiveness. That's it. Put it up on your fridge. Let's say, man, that's the way God wants us to talk. If you are married and things are at a difficult season, just put it up. Say, listen, let's both live. Let's both live. Let's both act. All right. As we think through that today, let's close with a Cottonwood Challenge. Let's close with the Cottonwood Challenge as we do every week. Let's put the Cottonwood Challenge. First of all, take some time to think about each of these commands given by Paul. Which one or two do you struggle with the most? Those six commands, those thoughts, which one? My guess is you have My guess is one of them really jumped out at you. In fact, if you were sitting right next to your bride, if you didn't pick up on it, it's the one where she put an elbow in your ribs. Okay, that's the one. Go back and highlight that one, all right? Which one do you struggle with the most? Next. Go to the next one. Have a conversation with your spouse or close friend. Ask them to rate you lovingly on these do's and don'ts. Man, if you want to really be a good friend to someone or be good to say, here, honey, spin it around. You tell me what I do well. Let them grade you. And then finally, ask them to give you examples. A lot of times, our weaknesses have become blind spots, right? That's why we keep doing them, because they're just blind spots. Sometimes it's pure selfishness. Sometimes it's just bad habit. Sometimes it's a blind spot. I don't know what it is in your life. But by having them point them out, you can say, oh, so when I say I hate you, that's offending you? All right? And some of you, sadly, and I will tell you, and the staff will know that last week, kind of the weight of this series hit me. Because this, as we prayed and planned and prepared for this series, we wanted great relationships to be the result. But what I know has happened in a lot of relationships is, man, we're beginning to resolve some difficult things. And Keith will tell you that last week when we played the video, I walked up behind him and just said, pray for me. Because it's like the weight of the series just landed on me. And really the weight of the series is coming through the Q&A, and it's coming through the question, and it's coming through the phone calls, and it's coming from the emails. And I know the beautiful thing is, this means you're working on it. But as your pastor, I hate to see you hurt. When you hurt, I hurt. And so the beautiful thing is this, I hope that as you give examples that you can say, listen, honey, you have no idea. When just we get in a little tiff, when you just say, do you want to end it? You have no idea the harm that does to our commitment. Give specific examples, but folks, do it lovingly. With the understanding, restoration is always the greatest desire. All right. Keith, you want to come out, and as we close in a worship time, I think we are doing that, right? Yes? Yes? Come on. No? All right. Listen, I'm going to sing. I'm going to sing to you. Oh. Hey, Scott. How you doing, buddy? All right. Hey, I want our altar team. Give Scott a hand. Yeah. Mainly because that means I'm not singing. All right? Hey, have our altar team come forward. Every Sunday, if you are a guest here today, two things. One, next weekend after the 11 o'clock service, I'll do a Q&A for you as guest. We'll have lunch if you'll just contact the office. But I know you have a lot of questions. You might have a lot of questions about a church. If you wonder why the altar team comes up here, these are all people who are up here every week. They've been trained. They've been talked to. That whatever is said to them here, they do a couple of things. One is they pray for you, and then they don't say anything to anybody else about it. So that's what the altar team's up here about. And so anytime we close, while others are heading to the door, if you'd like to pray for someone, head to the altar. All right, Scott, lead us as we sing. Stand up. Take care. God bless you. Have a fantastic day.